Welcome to the Seeds Uniting Church podcast. For more information and other resources, you can visit our website at seedschurch.org. Now enjoy this inspiring message from our Sunday morning service.
Good morning, everyone. I've just turned into my Bible to 2 Corinthians chapter 3, and I encourage you to do the same if you've got a smartphone or the more traditional Bible. Open it up. I'm going to be reading from the ESV. What a privilege, hey? We're going to continue our series. We've been looking at Don't Keep Calm. And Mark Elford did a great job of not keeping calm last week as he presented to us the good news of Jesus. So we're in week three of a five-week series. We're looking at the first five chapters of 2 Corinthians, a letter that the Apostle Paul wrote. There's 13 chapters, but it's just the first five that we focused on at the moment. So Jonathan brought us chapter one, and then Mark last week, chapter two, and then myself for this week, chapter three. We are going to dive right in. So verse one of 2 Corinthians chapter three says this: are we beginning to commend ourselves again? Or do we need, as some do, letters of recommendation to you or from you? So Paul starts off by just asking, are we big noting ourselves in saying what we've just said? Listen to Mark's podcast or have a read of what it says in chapter 2. There's some pretty big statements that he's just made of what God was doing in and through him and those around him. Then he asks the question, do we need letters of recommendation to you or from you? It's a big one in our world where those that have applied for jobs anytime recently probably had a referee. You hope your referee is going to say some good things about you. I had an interesting experience. I had 4 years where I had a small business making and selling apps for teachers. And the main app that I had, or the most successful one, was a planning app. And it took a bit of time to set up and also cost some money. So for those that wanted to find out if it was worth it, they would look at what others said. And the main place to do that was through Apple's App Store and the rating system and the review system there. And it's an interesting thing just to have a read through what other people who you don't know think about what you've done and whether they're endorsing it or like warning everyone about it. And I had this woman who wrote this review, which blew my mind. She likened my app to Narnia. And she's like, for her planning, you know, you go through the wardrobe and there's all the coats and jackets. And there's a jacket, is it a branch, is it a forest? But then coming out into the clearing, a whole new world. Thank you, make my day plan. I was like, I didn't pay her. I've never even met her. But she wrote this glowing review. But then there was the other side of things. So I had a woman who wanted to destroy me. She actually used the word destroy. Destroy my business, destroy me. She didn't mention my family, which was nice of her. But it was just brutal. And she also sent an abusive email, which was really helpful because if someone writes a review, there's no way you can contact them. But if they send you an email, then you have that way of dialoguing back with them. And so it became a great desire of mine to win this woman over. But we'll continue to read the text. So verse 2, there is something greater. You might have noticed behind me that we have a mathematical symbol that you may or may not have good associations with, but thank you. It's not actually a broken drum cage. This is not repairing something that's damaged. It is just an illustration of greater than. We have a God who is greater than anything else that we can imagine. We have some scriptures that point to this. This chapter that I'm reading, we're going to pick out some things that are greater than. But it is not that this is the only chapter where you could do that in the Bible. There's many. And there's some that might be familiar to you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down their life for their friends. That's a big deal. There's a lot of definitions of love around in our world today, but that is the greatest. Greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. It's good to notice the location as well. So it is referring to Satan. So Satan is out there, right? It doesn't mention how great he is, but he's significant, right? But then you have one who is not out there, but who is in here, who is in those who believe, who is greater than he that is in the world. It is a big, big deal. And there are so many scriptures that point to what is greater than. And I loved Maz's introduction this morning in a prayer. God is greater than the circumstances that come before us. And my hope this morning is not just to re-spout some things that might be familiar, but my hope this morning is that these things that can often be, oh yeah, that's true, oh yeah, I've heard that before, can be reflected in our lives. I don't think we understand something unless it is demonstrated through how we live. And my hope this morning is that some of these things might go from being things that we're aware of or things that we believe are true to things that we live out and exhibit, because that is where good things happen. We'll continue to read from verse 2. You yourselves are our letter. Whoa, that's different. That's not something external. It's not about receiving an endorsement from someone that advances your career. This is about someone being the objective. The person and their transformation and their development is what it is all about. I think back to that example that I mentioned of the lady that wanted to take me down. And I wanted her to have a good experience of my app. I wanted her to do well in teaching. But if I'm really honest, I just wanted her to change her review. I wanted her to write something nice and replace the damaging things she had written with a positive thing. But my focus was far more on what she could do that would benefit me. Whereas what Paul was saying here is it's not about an endorsement that you can give to me or that I can pass on from someone else. This is about you. You are our letters. As we continue to read this from verse 2, you yourselves are our letter of recommendation written on our hearts to be known and read by all. The way we tend to use heart in the West is more a case of our emotions, right? That's the touchy-feely kind of thing. Whereas the Jewish understanding of heart was far more the essence or the center of someone. You are written on our hearts. And it does affect our emotions, but you are written on my heart. What happens to you matters to me greatly. It is easy in family, in business, in schooling, and other areas of our life to be far more about what someone can do for us or someone stop doing the things that hurt us than it can be about what God is doing in them. The first greater then is that transformation is greater than endorsement. It is far better that someone actually experiences the freedom and joy that is in Jesus Christ than that they do things that make your life easier. It's a far better thing. It's like for a coach. It's a good thing to win the coach of the year, but it's not about winning the coach of the year. It's about winning a premiership. It's not about having the best and fairest in their speech get up and thank you and go, wow, what a great coach. It's about you as a coach bringing transformation to your team. And by the way, Ben Peters, I've never seen a coach play a better game of footy than what you played yesterday. That was fantastic. There is a far bigger goal. It is a good thing to have people say nice things about you. And I do appreciate it when I preach and people say, oh, I appreciate that. Thank you for that. That is a good thing, but it is so much greater that you would receive what is spoken and run with it and live it out. You are a letter that will be read by people that see you. There are people who randomly pick up a Bible and start reading it that don't have a faith before they start reading. That does happen. But what happens far more frequently is people see Christians and they read their life and they make a judgment call about Jesus. How vulnerable is Jesus in that sense? That's massive. His reputation is on the line, and he has entrusted us to demonstrate him. It's really big. Verse 3, and you show that you are a letter from Christ delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God. How good is that? It's not something that is written with an inanimate object, but the Spirit of the living God. There's only a few times that Paul uses that particular phrase, the living God. And he usually uses it to contrast it with an idol. So an idol who's on this side, who's dead, cannot do anything. And in contrast, the Spirit of the living God has so much greater than. And here, he's using another inanimate object of ink. It's not that just something's been written down, something has been placed within us, someone has been placed within us. And he's written upon our hearts. And it reminds us of the one time in the Old Testament where the new covenant is spoken of, which is in Jeremiah 31, where he will write his laws upon our hearts and upon our minds. This is a very different thing. If you think of what happened in the Old Covenant that was given through Moses, there is a law which is external, and we are called to live up to that. Whereas this new covenant is something that is internal, and we are to live out what has been done to us, to live out from our identity. Not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. How good is that? And then Paul makes one of his many really bold assertions. We see this throughout his writing. Verse 4, such is the confidence that we have through Christ toward God. He says these massive things. We have confidence before God. Think about that. Stand before God with confidence? Really? Can anyone do that? Only through Christ. That's what he makes clear in that next verse. Not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything is coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God. He has done something amazing in us, but it's him. Don't get confused. It's not from me. It is absolutely 100% from him. It continues on in verse 6, who has made us sufficient to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. There you have this contrast again of the old covenant and the new covenant. If we continue to read just the start of a couple of verses that are coming up, we get some other things. So we know that the letter, which is the letter of the law, kills. Let's read some other things about it. Start of verse 7. The ministry of death. All right. The start of verse 9. The ministry of condemnation. That's how the old covenant is referred to in these verses. The law is good. Paul says that himself in Romans 7. But what it brings in us is death. The law reveals God's will. It shows what he wants, and it shows us what he is like as well. But we can't live up to it. It literally brought death in many people because the consequence of not fulfilling the law that God gave through Moses in some instances was death. And people literally died as a result of not living up to it. So here is a ministry of death. In fact, the first day when it was given, so Moses comes down from the mountain, 3,000 people were killed on that day. 3,000 Israelites were killed when the law was given. But what's the contrast to that? The letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. So we have the letter of the law on this side, and what is greater than is the Spirit. The Spirit is greater than the law. The law comes with death. The Spirit comes with life. In stark contrast to 3,000 people being killed on the first day of the law, when the church is inaugurated on the day of Pentecost, the Holy Spirit is given. Guess how many people get baptized? It's 3,000, the exact same number. 3,000 receive the Holy Spirit and experience the abundance of life that is in Jesus Christ. It is so much greater. The Spirit is greater. Verse 7. Now, if the ministry of death, carved in letters on stone, came with such glory that the Israelites could not gaze at Moses' face because of its glory. Just take that in. That's basically a definition of the sun. You can't stare at the sun because it's so bright. They couldn't stare at Moses' face because it was so bright. It's like, whoa, turn down your face. It's too intense. That's a fair bit of glory. Glory is defined as being the awesome light that radiates from God's presence. But glory is also who God is. It demonstrates Him. And we see something of God's glory in that old covenant. But you might be aware, there's a lot of death in that old covenant. I mentioned some of it before, those 3,000 that were killed on the day when the law was given. But think of the lead up to the law being given. We had all these amazing things that happened through Moses, these signs and wonders that were spectacular. But you did not want to be on the other end of those, because it's death. Signs and wonders that often brought death and destruction. Even the Red Sea being parted, that was life for the Israelites, but it was death for those that were following them. God's glory was revealed in the old covenant, but it is revealed so much more strongly and clearly in the new. We'll continue to read the end of verse 7. This glory, which was being brought to an end. So if there was that much glory that his face shone, verse 8, will not the ministry of the Spirit have even more glory? So my third and final point, I know you're getting excited, I haven't been very long, but I'm going to be a while yet, don't worry. My third and final point is that the glory that was available to Moses was glorious. So glorious they couldn't even look at his face. So glorious that all these signs and wonders happened. It is not worth even comparing to the glory of the new covenant. It is so much greater. How great will the glory of the new covenant be? We've seen some of it, but there's some that we haven't seen yet. There's more goodness to come, and some of that is just because we haven't believed it. Some of that is because we haven't taken a hold of what is already available to us. Verse 9, for if there was glory in the ministry of condemnation, so there was glory in it, but it was about condemnation. The ministry of righteousness must far exceed it in glory. I had my two eldest daughters teach me a Bible verse during the week, one that they'd committed to memory. It's from Romans chapter 5, verse 17. It was one that I've been familiar with, but not in the translation that they've memorized. So Christy, my wife, encouraged them in this. And it was so fun to have them say it and me try to get it. I'm still trying to get it. But it's so similar to this verse. So this verse that talks about this amazing difference. You've got condemnation on the one side and you've got righteousness on the other. And this verse speaks about the difference between Christ and Adam. So for by the sin of this one man, Adam, death reigned over many. It's pretty big, isn't it? One person makes a mistake, and then it is sin that rules over everyone. And we can focus on that. We can spend time going, oh man, why did Adam have to eat that apple? And we can be focused on something that is big and significant and has caused so much destruction in our world. But we're far better off focusing on what is greater. The rest of that verse says, but even greater is God's wonderful grace and his gift of righteousness. For all who receive it will live in triumph over sin and death through this one man, Jesus Christ. That's totally different, isn't it? What rules us over here? Death. Over here, because of Christ, we live in triumph over sin and death. There is another translation of that verse, which says that we will reign in life. We will reign in life. What do you call someone who reigns in life? A reigner. That's exactly what you call them. Everyone gets to be a reigner. That's good news. Reign in life through this one man, Jesus Christ. What Adam did was big. I mentioned before what Satan is capable of and has done is big. But it is on the lesser than side. What God has done is greater. He is in us, and he is greater than anything that would stand against us. If God is for us, who can stand against us? The answer is no one. What Adam did doesn't stand against what God has done in us. What we can do doesn't stand against what he has already done. None of it compares to the surpassing greatness of our Lord. He is amazing, and he is sufficient for you and me to live in freedom all the days of our lives. We can live in freedom. We can live in triumph over sin and death. It's a good word, isn't it, Joe? Verse 10. Actually, I wanted to talk about Joe and some other interns. Like this whole thing of transformation, it is fun to see people set free. It is fun to see transformation in people. And I've had the great privilege over these last 3 years to work with some interns and see some transformation. Scotty struggled so much to read the Bible, physically struggled to read the Bible. And now if you go, when he's out doing his coffee cart stuff in some, wherever he is, he's probably got the Bible open just in case he gets a spare moment in between serving customers. And just be reminded about how good God is. I've seen transformation in him. In Joe Chapman and Beth, who are our interns last year, Joe can be task-oriented, just getting stuff done. She has sat with so many people one-on-one and just listened to them and encouraged them so consistently. And for Beth, she has such a peace and a joy that exudes out of her that is so strong, so much stronger than it was before. And it's fun to see that. Rob was transformed. When you talk to Rob after the service, if you get a chance, Rob Cartridge over here, he had an experience which caused fear. And it made sense that it caused fear in his life. But in February, he was totally set free from that. And there's been other areas of his life that have been transformed. He preached. I went with him a couple of weeks ago as he preached at a couple of churches. And it's just awesome to see Nick and his engagement in the scriptures, and to see the strategy that he employs when he is sharing the gospel with others is wonderful. To see the change in Dale when a crisis comes up, when something doesn't go right, to see a greater calmness over him. And also he has the most contagious laugh of anyone I know. It's fantastic. And Josh, who had this private faith, now has a faith that engages with others and actually draws others into it. And he shares the gospel with people that don't yet know Jesus. And it's fun to see transformation. The gospel transforms us. And it is such good news. Verse 10. Indeed, in this case, what once had glory has come to have no glory at all. It had glory, but now it's got none because of the glory that surpasses it. For if what was being brought to an end, this is verse 11, if what was being brought to an end came with glory, much more will what is permanent have glory. The law was given for a season and for a purpose. But it's done. The old covenant is finished. We stand in a brand new covenant that is greater. We can learn from the old covenant, but we're not in it anymore. Let's not live as though we are. Let's not live like we have to impose upon others stuff from the outside or even ourselves. We have a beautiful thing in the scriptures. So something has transformed within us. It doesn't mean that we're a law unto ourselves. It doesn't mean we do whatever we feel like. We have a guide in the scriptures to see if what we are doing actually measures up. In fact, it's better than that. We have a guide so we know what we ought to be doing. We are called to a new covenant, but he is still in charge. That's something that comes through in both covenants. It's God that is in charge. Verse 12, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. Not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face so that the Israelites might not gaze at the outcome of what was being brought to an end. So I mentioned before, he's shiny, right? People can't even look at him because he's so shiny. That started to fade. But he goes back into God's presence and he's shiny again. His initial solution to the problem of people not being able to bear the brightness was a veil. He starts going in with the veil off to the presence of God. His face becomes shiny again. The people see that his face is shiny and then he covers it up. Paul is implying in here that there was probably some good motivation of like, I want to be able to converse with people without blinding them. But there was also this desire that people wouldn't see that this thing was fading. This thing that was being brought to an end. He was covering something. So when it says that we are bold, not like Moses, it's like we are open and we show who we are. We are vulnerable in that sense. We don't need to cover up. Please keep wearing clothes. We don't need to cover up to put on some sort of pretense or a mask. We are open with who we are, not like Moses, who would cover himself with that veil. He then goes on to work this analogy a fair bit with the veil. Verse 14, but their minds were hardened for to this day. Here he shifts from what happened back then to his own day. When he says this, when they read the old covenant, that same veil remains unlifted because only through Christ is it taken away. You have this thing that stops you from engaging with God. And it is only lifted in Christ. And there's something about the old covenant, something about if I live this way, then God will be pleased with me. If I do these things, there's something about that mentality and that attitude, which could be summed up as religion. There's something about religion that stops us from engaging with God because we are trying to get to him when he's the one that got to us. And if you talk to people who haven't been to church for a while or have never been to church, one of the most common things that they will talk about is the rules and the things that we stand against. We're more known for what we can't do and what we say no to than what we say yes to, than who empowers us to live different. He is greater. And I want to know that more. I want all of us to walk in that more and more every single day. Verse 15, yes, to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil lies over their hearts. But when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed. So he gets rid of it. We have face-to-face connection with God, and that is amazing. We have more access to God. The glory available to us is greater than the glory available to Moses. That's significant, isn't it? Yeah. Moses had a lot of glory, but we have more. We have more glory in this covenant than what he had in his. He looked forward to our day. A prophet will arise from among you like me, is what he talked about, which was Jesus. He was looking forward with anticipation to what was to come. He lived in some pretty cool stuff, but it was lesser. What Moses experienced and what Moses was a part of was lesser than what you and me, not just what Jesus and the disciples, what you and me get to live in today. It's greater. I think one of the things that we can be distracted by when it comes to that is comparisons. And so we may have some sort of acknowledgement, oh yeah, so we've got this access to God. But we want to be perhaps that person that has special access, like Moses was. So he was the one, wasn't he? He was the one that went up the mountain. He was the one that brought down the law. He was the one who was vindicated time and again. He was the one that was his staff, split the sea. He was the one. And I think we can fall, probably each of us, at different times into two categories. One where we want to be Moses. We want to be the one that everyone goes, wow, I'm so grateful that we have them. Otherwise, we'd have no idea about God and all these things. But other times, we can want to be under someone's teaching like that. And we actually create a mediator between us and God in someone else. And it can happen from a platform like this. We could put a pastor in that sort of role. That's not God's intention. There's one mediator, and it's Jesus, and he's done what needs to be done. So now we have direct access to God. That glory that we are in is greater. However, I don't think we've tapped into that anywhere near as much as we could. Final two verses of this chapter, verse 17. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. So where the Spirit is, there's what? Where's the Spirit? Where's the freedom? If the Lord is the Spirit and the Spirit brings freedom, if you are in the Lord, you're in the Spirit and the Spirit's in you, then you have freedom. I'm sure all of us have freedom that we haven't explored yet. Freedom that we haven't really known, understood about, and that is available to us. And the final verse, and we all with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. Did you catch the first two words? We all. Not just Moses. Not just the one guy who has his demeanor, his face changed. It is all of us. We all get to behold the glory of the Lord. Some translations say, as in a mirror. And we're being transformed into his image, the same image, the image of Christ, to look more like him every single day. What a privilege. What a great opportunity. You are not without hope. Whether this is brand new for you, you've rocked up today and it's not familiar to come to church, welcome. This is for you. If you've been coming to church, if you've been preaching for decades, it's for you. Welcome. It's good news. It impacts upon all of us. We are all included in this. Transformation is so much greater than endorsement. Let's not live in that space over there. Let's live in a place of transformation in what we seek for others and what we seek for ourselves. I'm going to invite the band to come up. And then I want to invite you into an opportunity in between our final two songs.